Hi there, this is Anna Guest Jelly from Curvy Yoga, here with You Don't Have to Have a Yoga Body to Do Yoga, 5 Ways to Make Yoga Work for You. I am so excited to be here with you today, talking about this topic, which is one of my favorite things to talk about, and I'm going to kind of go through some history about who I am, in case you don't know me, and about Curvy Yoga, what it's all about. And then I'm going to go through the 5 ways, and I'm going to give you lots of great tips, things to check out. So I'm really excited to share all this information. So let's just go ahead and dive on in. I'm going to start with just a little bit about me. I am somebody who has a lifelong history of dieting. I have been on 65, you heard that right, 65 diets in my life. And it was only until I tallied up that number that I realized, oh my goodness, if 65 diets haven't quote unquote work, then I might not be on the right path here. and I'd like to think that I could have figured that out after like 8, but nope, 65. So this is really what got me onto the path of exploring health at every size. And as soon as I found out about health at every size, I started just reading everything I could. You know, of course, I read Linda Bacon's book, but I also read Marilyn Wan's book, Fat So, and just so many other things, checking out great blogs like Golda's here, and really learning a lot about what it means to approach your health in a way that's individualized and really born out of your own intuition and sense of bodily knowing. And I think that this came certainly not easily. It's certainly something I've been working on for years, but it made sense to me on a gut level, I think, because of my experience with yoga. And this is where the two really intersect. So when I started practicing yoga, I was 18 years old in college. I had chronic migraines, and I was honestly just desperate for anything to relieve that pain. I had done, you know, I'd taken every prescription medication, I'd done every MRI, CAT scan, you know, any possible Western medical thing that I could do, and I had found some relief in different ways from different things, but never anything that really just took the pain away on a daily basis. And so I was really looking around for anything, and I found out about biofeedback. And from biofeedback, I went to meditation. From meditation, I found yoga. And so I really came to yoga looking for pain relief and honestly looking to lose weight, because that's where I was in my life at the time. I was like, oh, this will be a great way for me to lose weight. And that was my door in. And once I kind of came through that door, that's when things started to shift for me away from what I had thought I might receive from yoga. So I did, fortunately, experience some pain relief with meditation and yoga. It really helped me to tune into my body, to notice more quickly the signs that I might be getting a migraine so I could intercede more quickly. And it also just helped me to relax my body, which is huge for migraines, at least for me, is being able to just relax my body and maybe just let go of some of the tension that I'm holding, especially around my forehead, the back of my neck, areas like that. So in those very practical ways, yoga sort of reeled me in. And I started practicing at home with DVDs, actually with VHS tapes, so there weren't DVDs at the time. So I had these VHS tapes, and I would practice when my roommate was in class. And then slowly I started to check out going to take a class in person. And I was totally freaked out about doing this. I had no idea what it would be like. You know, of course, the people on my DVDs were these like lithe-bodied, super flexible people. And I was just like, if this is who is in yoga classes, like, I am screwed. So it took me quite a while to get into a class. And then once I did, for the most part, I enjoyed the experience, but I always felt like I stuck out like a sore thumb. You know, everyone else in the class was significantly smaller bodied than I was. And my teachers never gave me any modifications. Like, they would say things, and maybe you've heard this if you've gone to a yoga class or just kind of heard people talking about it. They might say something like, okay, you're going to fold forward and lay your belly on your thighs. Well, I don't have to move 0.2 centimeters to start to lay my belly on my thighs. So I would hear instructions like that, you know, other things around that. And I would just be like, wait, that's a thing? Like, people have to actually lay their belly on their thighs? Like, what does this mean? And then on the other side of that, I would be clearly struggling in some poses where perhaps my belly or, you know, any part of my body was inhibiting my movement a little bit, and the teacher would not offer me a way to practice more comfortably. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, once I finally get down to being like a super skinny person, then I'll finally love yoga. I'll finally get it. It'll finally feel like really, really good. And so I had this idea that like yoga, even though I was practicing, it was kind of like I was getting away with something being in those classes. So over time, my yoga path continued, as did my history of dieting, until I had that moment that I mentioned earlier where I started to realize like, maybe something else needs to shift here. And those two things kind of happened concurrently, so that as I was starting to look at health at every size in my own life at intuitive eating, I also started to realize that maybe the problem with yoga for me wasn't that I just needed to wait till I got skinny as much as maybe the problem was that the teachers didn't know what to do and that no one was receiving that instruction. More of an information problem than anything. So at that point, I started to think about becoming a teacher. I was already an English teacher on the side, so teaching was something that was a part of my life. But I still wasn't sure, like, would people even be interested in the idea of intersecting these two? But I just decided to go for it and did a teacher training. And that's really what brought me into curvy yoga, which is what I do today, sharing yoga with people of all shapes and sizes and really helping them find a practice that works for them. Because to me, that is the beautiful thing about yoga. There's a way for all of us to do it. You can do it from a chair, you can do it from a bed. There's not this sort of prescribed thing that yoga has to be. It really is about connecting with your own body and then moving from that sense of groundedness, rootedness, internal wisdom. Another thing that I like about health at every size and curvy yoga is that I think from a philosophical standpoint, they really intersect. So to me, health at every size emphasizes people defining what is healthy for them. And yoga is very similar in that we use that body's internal wisdom to guide our movement. So the two, I think, are very connected and very complementary. So if you're on a path of learning about health at every size, yoga might be a beautiful complement. And the same is true if you're on a path learning about yoga, health at every size might be a great way to integrate a health approach in a way that is sane and sustainable and makes sense for your life, whatever your particular health goals or needs are. So what we're going to do next, I'm just going to give you a quick overview. I'm going to go into the five suggestions that I have to make yoga really work for you. Then I'm going to go through some FAQs, so some questions that often come up when I'm talking with students, and then I'm going to point you at the end to a fun free resource that you can go check out if you'd like. So if you're ready, we're going to go ahead and get started. So suggestion number one is to make space. And this is just so important that you have enough space on your mat and in the way that you're setting up your poses so that you can move in a way that feels good. Now, let me say a little bit more about that. A lot of instructions that are given in yoga classes are sort of given by default to or for people with very narrowly framed bodies. So those of us with wider or bigger bodies are just not going to have enough space to really feel good. A great example of this is in quite a few yoga classes, they'll either instruct you when you're standing to stand with your feet completely together, or they might say step your feet hip distance apart. So I'm going to kind of break down about why both of those can be problematic for those of us with curvy bodies. Stepping your feet together, depending on how your body is shaped. For me, for example, if I step my feet together, the skin of my thighs really like mushes together in a way that doesn't feel good. But setting aside that, it also causes my knees to buckle in a little bit. So, of course, standing with your knees buckled in is not a safe position, really even for a moment, much less over the course of an hour, not to say the course of, like, you know, a long yoga practice. If you're going to be doing something, you know, over weeks, months, years, potentially, yoga could be integrated over the lifetime. So we really want to be careful and thoughtful about setting up our alignment in a way that will be extremely safe for each of our particular bodies. The next one, which is step your feet a comfortable or a hip distance apart, is okay, but it can get us kind of into a drama because a lot of times yoga teachers will say, you know, I don't mean the outside of your skin, the skin of your hips, but the inside, the internal hip bones. And a lot of us may not know exactly where those are. They might be hard to find. And it just kind of gets us into this whole, like, head game thing about inside versus outside hips and all that. So what I like to say, and what I definitely encourage you to think about, is stepping your feet a comfortable distance apart. And this works really well because it starts you off from the beginning in a position that feels really good. And there's not a safety risk if your feet are mat width apart, if they're wider than mat width apart, if they're somewhere in between, you know, wherever they are, because from that position of the feet, you can then build your alignment up from there. So stacking knees over the feet, hips over the knees, shoulders over the hips, that's kind of how we tend to align, kind of like a head, shoulders, knees, and toes kind of thing, that song that you might have learned when you were a little kid, or you might have shared with your own children. So that's that one instruction to step the feet wider in standing poses can give a lot of freedom to many poses. So if you've ever been to a yoga class before, or you can also Google this, you might have done what's sometimes referred to as a sun salutation. Sometimes it's also referred to as vinyasa or a flow. There's different words that people use, but typically they mean just about the same thing. And it's this group of poses that include the stand, just the regular standing position, which is sometimes called mountain pose or Tadasana or Samasthitihi. I'm just kind of trying to throw out different terms in case you're familiar with one and not another. So from there, with the feet wider, you would then inhale, reach the arms up overhead, and then you exhale, fold forward into a standing forward bend. So right here is another great opportunity for when the feet are wider to have a better experience. Because if you, like me, when you fold forward, are compressing your belly, if the feet are wider, your belly has a little more room to breathe. And that, of course, feels a lot better than like a smushed and uncomfortable belly. The wide feet is also helpful whenever you're coming into downward dog, which may be part of a sun salutation if you're in a yoga class. You could take the hands and the feet mat width apart, give yourself a little more room. And then for the kind of final part of the sun salutation where this might be helpful, it's great when you're stepping one foot forward into a lunge. Because for a lot of us, stepping that foot forward, your knee is going to hit your belly, and it's not all about the belly. I'm going to come to other body parts in a moment. But in this case, your knee comes into your belly, and then it's hard to bring that foot forward. Now, there are a lot of different options for this. You can step the foot forward in several steps instead of one. You might rest the opposite knee on the ground and kind of swing the foot forward. Or you can just step that foot wider. Instead of stepping it directly behind your hand, especially if your hands are not mat width, you can step it outside the hand or just a little bit wider than the hand. And that, again, is just giving you more room, which is the room that your body needs to come into the pose in a comfortable position. So this is the first thing that I recommend, just widening your feet. It's something that's so simple, but that can make such a big difference, especially if you're in a yoga class where your teacher may not know about these kinds of curvy modifications. It's something that you can just always have in your mind. If they say step your feet together, you step them a comfortable distance apart. And if the teacher comes over and asks you to step them together or has a question, you can just say, this is how I feel more comfortable. This is what I need to be in alignment, and hopefully they'll respect that. Oftentimes, if a teacher is asking you, kind of coming over after they've given an instruction, they're really wanting just to make sure that you're okay and that you understand what's going on. So if you can just kind of say, you know, this is what feels good, this is what I want to do, then they'll go along with that, I think, for the most part. Alrighty, so next recommendation, next way to really make yoga work for you is to move your flesh, move your skin. So this is going to come right into all those different body parts like I just mentioned a minute ago. And this is something for me that has been so revolutionary for my practice, and it definitely helps a lot of my students. And it is becoming comfortable touching your own body and moving your skin when you need to practice more comfortably. So this time we're going to go ahead and start with the booty. We're going to start with the butt. And there's a couple different ways where it's helpful to move the skin. And one is when you're just sitting down. So oftentimes in yoga class, you might start or end the class or throughout the class come into some kind of seated position, whether this is cross-legged or legs out in front of you. And what I like to do is when I come down to seated, just rock a little bit to one side. So let's say rock a little to the left. Bring your right hand underneath the skin of the right butt cheek and just move that skin out and back a little bit. So it's moving to the right and a little bit back, kind of on a diagonal. And then you just release, go rock to the right, move the skin on the left, and come back to center. And what this is helping you to do is get a little bit more balanced on the sit bones or the bones that you are actually sitting on. And it helps you to have a more rooted position, which is really helpful for all of the poses so that you don't sort of, you're not lopsided and you're not unstable. You can really get into the poses in a safe way. The next place that this is helpful moving the booty in some way is when you are laying down. So for those of us who are carrying around a bigger booty, it's nice to make space because when you lay down, sometimes it can cause a arch in the lower back that can feel really uncomfortable and could potentially be unsafe either in the moment or especially over time. A lot of these things are things that we might think, oh, we'll just push ourselves through a little bit of discomfort in class. And in that one class, it's possible that you'll be fine. But what will happen over time is because that's a repetitive strain, it can create an injury born out of that repetition. So it's good to really get your alignment and feeling good, not only for this moment, but also for your long-term ability to practice in a way that feels great. So there's a few options here, and this shows up a lot in the relaxation pose. Oftentimes people will be uncomfortable if they're asked to extend their legs because that lower back arch is becoming too strong. So one thing you can do is just not extend your legs. So if you're laying down, you're at the end of class when people are relaxing, you can just keep your knees bent. That might be a more comfortable position. You can also keep the knees bent, lift your hips up just a little bit. They don't even have to leave the ground. And you have a very slight pelvic tuck. So you're kind of almost like making a motion of tucking the tailbone a little bit. That lengthens the back, especially the lower back. And then you can lower the hips down. From there, you can play with extending one leg and then the other to see if that has helped to the extent that it would be comfortable to keep the legs extended, or if you want to just go back and keep the legs bent. And then there's other options too. You know, if you extend the legs, you can always put a blanket under the knees. That can help to lengthen the lower back as well. Next, I want to move to the skin of the thighs, especially the inner thighs. And this is really helpful in a cross-legged position. So what you would do is come into a cross-legged position and then take your hands and rotate the skin of your thigh. So if we'll start with the right leg. And what that might look like is taking the right hand into the belly of the hamstring. So right behind, kind of in the middle of the back of your leg. And then the left hand comes to your right inner thigh. And you rotate the skin. It's coming down underneath the leg and out to the right a little bit. And this is a relatively subtle movement. But again, it's one of those things, especially in conjunction with moving the skin out from under the butt cheeks. And I'm just throwing out butt cheek instead of gluteus, just so we all kind of maybe have a better sense of what I'm talking about, since you're not seeing me do this, can help that sitting position be more comfortable. Next thing I want to talk about is returning to the belly. And one of the things that can be really helpful for the belly is tucking the skin. And that means either tucking it down towards your pelvis or lifting it up and out. And this is, you know, in a lot of ways a matter of personal preference. It's really helpful in forward bends, especially seated forward bends. And it's also helpful in twists. So what it would look like is you'd come into a seated position. If we're going to do a forward bend, for example, you might have your legs extended out in front of you, however wide. And you might like to sit on something like a blanket just to lift the hips up a little bit, give you a little more room to move. And then from here, once you're set up, you've moved the skin out from under your butt. You maybe have rotated, internally rotated the skin of the thighs. And now here you are ready to go. So you might even like to try just not moving the skin first, seeing what that feels like. You might have a little compression or discomfort. And then you can come back out and try these two different options. So first one, you're going to bring both hands to either side of your lower belly. So we're talking at least at the belly button, if not lower. And the hands are going to tuck the skin down and towards the pelvis. You can kind of nestle it in there, depending on what the shape of your belly is like. And then fold forward from there, noticing any differences. And for me, when I do that, I'm doing it right now. I just have a little bit more room to move, a little more comfort, and less feeling of squishedness in a way that feels uncomfortable. And then you can come back out, try the other option. So this time, hands come to the exact same place, lower belly, either side, and you're just going to take the skin and pick it up a little bit. So pick it up, kind of rest it wherever it comes. For me, I can pick up my lower belly and rest it a little bit on my thighs. And so from there, folding forward again, seeing how that feels. On my body, I prefer tucking down in towards the pelvis, but many of my students prefer the feeling of lifting up and out. So I think trying and just seeing what you like is a great option. And then last thing I wanted to talk about here is making space for the breasts, especially if you're doing something like an inversion, where if your body is anything like mine, you might feel suffocated, like your breasts are coming to smother you in the pose. So one option is to wear some kind of industrial bra. Of course, it can be difficult to find plus size bras, so definitely like shop around, see if you can find anything. That might help a little bit. Another option is to take a yoga strap. And if you're practicing at home, you don't have to have a yoga strap. You could do something like a cloth belt off of a bathroom robe or something like that. And what you're going to do is take the belt or the tie or whatever and just bring it to the very top of your breast, cinch it so that you have a little bit of, it's snug, but it's definitely not really tight because you still need to be able to move a little bit and then come into the pose. And then what this does is just help just a little bit. It doesn't make it like completely a non-issue depending on the shape of your body, but it can help just give a little enough space that you feel like you can catch a breath. And then the other thing you can do, which it sometimes is hard to feel like you have permission to do in a class, but you of course you totally do, is just skip those poses. So for example, for me, I very rarely, if ever, practice the pose that sometimes is called plow. It's something where, like, your feet, you're laying on the ground and your feet end up coming up behind your head. For lots of reasons, I don't practice that, but especially for the boob suffocation issue, I'm just, like, not worth it. I can do another inversion that's gentler, that's a lot more accessible for me, and I think that that's a great way to approach your practice, like, what's really feeling good for you, and the considering what's the benefit of this pose. So in a pose like plow, you're getting inversion benefits, but could you get inversion benefits from another pose, like legs up the wall, which can be a lot more accessible, or legs resting on a chair, or bridge pose? Yes, of course, you can get those very similar, if not exactly the same benefits. So find what pose is going to give you whatever benefit you're looking for in a way that really works for you. That's my recommendation. All right, just grabbing a swig of water here. Suggestion number 3 is to befriend props. Props are like my number one favorite thing. I am all about props. I have thought about opening a yoga studio just so I can fill it with props and have everything at my disposal when I'm teaching. And what I'd like to do is talk you through a few different props that are available and also make some recommendations of ones you might like to check out. So we'll start with yoga mats. Yoga mats are all over the place these days. You know, you can find them in places like Target. It wouldn't surprise me to find one at a gas station. Like, they're kind of everywhere. But if you're looking for something that is more than what you might find there, it like offers more support, I have a couple recommendations. So number one, it can be really nice to find a thick mat. I think you can decide on what thickness you like. I really like the brand of mat called Manduka, M-A-N-D-U-K-A. It is an expensive mat. It's maybe like $80. But what I like about it, because I'm practicing and teaching and, you know, kind of running around, it really gives a nice comfort. Like, I don't feel like I'm standing directly on the ground, especially since, you know, oftentimes I'm like on wood floors or cement or, you know, not something that has a lot of give to it. So you can look for thicker mats. And the Manduka is by far not the only brand that carries this. So you could easily just Google thick yoga mats and see what different thicknesses are available. There's lots of different options and see what might work for you. Another thing I wanted to recommend is a wide mat. So there's sort of like a standard mat size, and that's probably what you would find at a place like Target. Although I think I've seen the long mats there as well. But there are mats that are made wider. And what's nice about that is, going back to my earlier point about stepping the feet a comfortable distance apart, if for you that's mat width or a little bit wider than mat width of a standard mat, just getting a wider mat would be a great option. So I have looked into this before too, and Jade yoga mat, so that's just J-A-D-E, offers an extra wide and an extra extra wide yoga mat. So if you're interested in that, you might check out what Jade has to offer. And I'm not like a spokesperson for any of these companies. People just ask me about this a lot, so I know a little bit about it. You can also, again, just Google wide yoga mat. I did that yesterday when I was preparing for this call, and there were several different options available. All right, next, this brings us to blocks, and this may be something you've seen before. Blocks usually come in foam, wood. Those are typically the ones you'll see in yoga studios or classes. Sometimes they're cork, other materials, but probably foam is the one that you see most often. And what's great about blocks is that they bring the floor to you. So again, this goes back to that idea of adapting the practice in a way that really works for you. So if you're doing a pose and you're being asked to bring your hands to the floor, like a standing forward bend, and that's not working for you, you kind of have one of three options. One is to hang out wherever you are. So maybe your back is kind of like not all the way down, but part of the way, and your hands are on your thighs. That's fine, but sometimes it can get uncomfortable to sort of hover in this in-between position. Option two is to go ahead and force your hands down to the ground in which case you're going to for sure compromise some part of your alignment if your body's not at that point where the hands can come to the floor comfortably. And you may potentially risk injury, especially in things like forward bends, risking tearing a hamstring attachment, which is a serious injury and takes some time to rehab. And then your other option is to bring the floor to you. So unsurprisingly, I choose bring the floor to you as a great way to maintain your alignment and work with your body exactly where it is in this moment. And the nice thing is that the body really supports us in this idea of working where we are. Because if we strain, for example, with the forward bend, if I really like push myself, bring my hands flat down to the ground when my body's not warmed up and ready to do that, or if I'm just at a time in my life when that's not accessible, not only will I risk injury, my body will also really tense up. So all the muscles around my hamstrings, around my back, maybe my neck and shoulders, they're all going to get really tense because they're anticipating an injury and or they're trying to prevent an injury. So when the body is this tense, the muscles can't relax. So it's this interesting catch-22 where you're trying to push yourself into this like extreme version of the pose, but you are receiving literally no benefits, none of the stretching benefits from yoga that you could be getting if you were working exactly where you needed to be. And that's another reason why I think props are so important, because if you have a block under your hand, and blocks usually have three different heights, so you can kind of figure out which one works for you, and you're working at a place where you feel a stretch, but you don't feel any strain, and the body can relax a little bit, let go into the pose, that's when you're really getting those benefits. And that's when the benefits are going to stick around. So it won't be something like, oh, you majorly overstretch for 5 seconds, and then your body recoils, because that's something the body will do as well. So maybe it will somehow allow you to do this stretch for like, you know, 10 seconds. And then when you come out, all of your muscles are immediately going to shorten. So anything that you've, you know, quote unquote achieved in this aggressive forward bend is then completely counteracted when you come out of the pose. So it's not only about pushing yourself or making yourself do more or whatever, but also like how the body actually works and what feels good as well. Okay, so I'll hop off my block soapbox for a second. I found myself getting very into it there. And I'm going to talk for a minute about straps. So straps are a way to really kind of lengthen your arms. So if you're reaching for your leg, if you're laying down and doing a leg stretch and you're wanting to hold onto your foot and you can't reach it, strap is perfect. Again, it's not only about can or can't, but also what feels good. So if you're really like, what I see a lot, if people won't use a strap and they're holding on, but they don't have the opening in their body to really do that, is that their head will come off the ground, their neck and shoulders will be really strained, and they'll kind of be like, holding on to their foot for dear life. And of course, like, is their leg stretching in that position? Probably not. Or if it is, it's going to be, again, one of those recoil things. So I like to describe straps as my go-go gadget arm. If you ever watch that show, know about that show, Inspector Gadget. That's basically how it is. Like, you're in a stretch, in a pose, you wish your arm was longer, boom, you have your magical strap there to make that happen. All right, I want to talk about just a few more props here. One is blankets. And often in times in yoga class, when we say blanket, we're talking about a relatively firm blanket, one that has, not like one of the ones that you would like snuggle with on a couch necessarily. It has a little bit more substance to it. And it's great to sit on, to lift up your hips in seated poses. And it's also wonderful in restorative poses to allow the body to relax and open a little bit. Another one I wanted to touch on is a bolster. And bolsters come in several different sizes. Some of them are more rectangular and some are rounder. They have similar and different purposes, but basically both of them are living up to their name. They're bolstering your pose in some way. So It might be that you sit on a bolster to lift your hips up even higher than a blanket. Or a bolster might be something that you either lay back onto or lay forward onto in a restorative pose. And we're going to talk more about restorative in just a moment. Last two props I wanted to talk about are a chair and the wall. And chairs are so awesome. I cannot talk up the benefit of chairs enough. And it does not have to be a fancy chair. Any chair that does not have wheels, therefore is stable, is great for yoga. And this can be something where you're learning a pose and you sit on a chair and really work with your alignment. It can be something where if you're not able to stand for a while, if you're not able to get onto the ground, there's modifications for standing and ground-seated poses that will work in a chair. So this is another way, like I was talking about earlier, that all of us really can practice yoga in a way that works for us. I personally love chair yoga and feel like it always teaches me and my students quite a bit because you're right there in the chair and you're going to get that alignment and that chair is not going to lie to you about what your alignment is because it's not moving. And the same is true for the last prop I wanted to talk about, which is a wall. And the wall is very similar. You can use it for so many different things. One of my favorites is down dog with a wall. So down dog can often be a difficult and intimidating pose done in the sort of traditional way on the ground. And what you can do at the wall is place your hands on the wall at hip height, pressing your hands into the wall. And then walk your feet back until your body is in an L shape. So your back is sort of the short side of the L and your legs are the long side. Maybe, I mean, depending on the proportions of your body, it doesn't really matter. Either way, you're in an L. And in this position, you can really feel the extension and freedom that can come in down dog, but not in a way that involves much struggle. It doesn't, you know, you're not having to hold yourself up on your arms and you're not trying to like crank your feet down to the ground if your calves won't, you know, all those things that can happen in the down dog on the ground. So that's just one great example of using the wall. Of course, it's also excellent for balancing poses and any number of different things. So those are just some ideas to introduce you to. If you're interested in purchasing props, again, you can kind of find some of them, like especially block and strap, maybe at places like Target. One website that I like is yogaaccessories.com, and that's just yogaaccessories, all one word, .com. They have pretty inexpensive options. They have sales all the time, and what I have purchased from them has been pretty sturdy and reliable. So again, I'm not like getting a kickback from that, and that's just something that I personally like to use. All right, so here we are for suggestion number 4, and that is to look for a curvy-friendly yoga class. So the first 3 points have been relevant for a home practice and or for being in class. And so I wanted just to talk for a moment about how to find a class, because this is a question that I get from people often. So I'm just going to talk through a quick little checklist. And I do have a blog post about this on my site, so you can always just look that up on my site. I think it's called How to Find a Curvy-Friendly Class. Like, it's a pretty straightforward blog post title, so you can check that out. And the first thing to do is to do a need inventory. So figure out what your own needs are. Like, what are you looking for in a class? What are you hoping to get out of it? Do you have a particular injury or illness that you're wanting to rehab? Then you might want to look for a therapeutic class. Do you need more relaxation? You might want to look for a restorative class. Are you looking for an all-over stretch? You might be looking for a Hatha class. So it's good to have a sense of what you're looking for in terms of types of poses being done, approach to teaching, pace of the class, those kinds of things. So once you have a sense of that, you can begin researching. Handy Google is great. Many yoga classes and studios and teachers are online in some capacity or another these days. So I would definitely Google something like yoga and the name of your town and see what comes up. And once you start looking through those results, you can begin looking for keywords. And some keywords that I recommend looking for are hatha, which is H-A-T-H-A. This is a type of yoga. Sometimes people use this word to refer to their class. It's sort of a general word in some ways. But oftentimes what people mean when they say that is that it's not a flow class or a vinyasa class. So that can be a key word to look for. And a vinyasa or a flow class could be awesome. Sometimes it means that it's a faster pace. Sometimes it means that it incorporates more quote-unquote advanced poses. Now, I wish I could give you more specifics, like this word always means fill in the blank, but unfortunately these words take on a lot of different meanings depending on who uses them. So there's no way for me to say, like, oh, a hatha class will always be great, or a vinyasa class will never be great, because that's not true. It really just depends on what you're looking for. Other words to consider are slow flow. Sometimes people will have that. Beginners, accessible, gentle. Any of these are fairly used terms in yoga class descriptions that might give you a little bit of a key that it might be a class that you'd be interested in checking out. The next thing to do, which I highly recommend, is to talk with friends. So if you have friends who practice yoga who love their teachers, definitely find out like who their teacher is, where they teach. If you can, if they're available online, go check out their class online, see what they say. I think firsthand recommendations are always great for yoga teachers. Now, the only thing to consider is if your friend has different needs than you do, you know, if they were perhaps doing the need inventory I just recommended, then their teacher who they love might not be who you love. So it's not a universal for sure, but it's definitely great to get that as another source of suggestion. The next thing to do once you find a teacher whose class you might like to take is to connect with that teacher. So there's a couple different ways you can do this. You could send them an email, you could call them on the phone, connect with them on social media, and just kind of share what you're looking for in a class, ask any questions that you have. This is great for two reasons. One, it helps you connect with them before class, and two, it just puts you on their radar so that when you come to class, they'll be like, oh, Anna, yeah, we talked online, I'm so glad you're here, you know, and then they can help you get set up or whatever you need to get started in the class. The next thing I suggest is snagging a buddy. So if you have a friend who will come with you to class, I feel like that's always easier. It's just a little bit less stressful and intimidating to go into a new class when you have a friend with you. So if you have a friend who's game, then make it a date. And then the next thing to do is to go to class and check it out. And what I really recommend is approaching it with the attitude that the class may or may not be a good fit for you. The nice thing today is that there's so many different yoga teachers, and there's just so many yoga teachers in general in many areas, although certainly there are areas where there are not many or any yoga teachers, is that you have the choice to check out other classes. And I think regardless of, you know, shape or size or whatever, it can take a while to find a yoga teacher who you really connect with. So if you go to your first class and you don't connect with the teacher, of course, that can be disappointing. But it's also sort of part of the yoga experiment, for lack of a better way of thinking about it. So this is your yoga experiment. You're figuring out what you like, who you like, what you like, why, you know, all that. So if you find a teacher you don't like, then in a lot of ways that's a good thing, because you have more information about what you are looking for when you go to your next class. Okay, so now I'm to my last tip, and this is probably the most important tip, but I left it for last, is to let your body be the guide. As I talked about at the beginning of the call, yoga is always first and foremost about connecting with your body. So if you're in a class and something doesn't work for you, I think many of us, me for sure, I will say, it's easy for me to get into the idea that the pose isn't working because there's something wrong with me. I immediately internalize it like, oh my gosh, I can't do this pose, what's wrong with me? And really what I've learned as a teacher is that if something's not working, it's not because of you at all. It's just about the pose or the instruction. So either the pose is not a great fit for your body and you can find a different pose that would work better, or you just need a little more help and experimentation into how to do the pose in a way that feels really good for you. So if you're finding yourself in a position where you're feeling frustrated, like, oh, why can't I do this? Then I definitely invite you to just take a moment, take a deep breath, totally meet yourself in that place where many of us find ourselves, blaming ourselves for something that's not our fault. And then take a moment to think about how the situation could change in a way that would make you feel a lot better. The other thing to remember is that many, if not most, yoga teachers receive no training on how to work with students with curvy or bigger bodies. And of course, that's something that I'm working to change through my work with curvy yoga. But in the meantime, I think it's all about your empowerment and doing what's right for you. So if you're doing some of this experimentation on your own at home, if you check out some of the free resources on my site or connect with other people who are doing this, you know, it's great to figure out what works for you and then do that, and not think that if a teacher gives you a different instruction or questions what you're doing, that that means that they're right and you're wrong. Because just because they're the teacher does not mean that they're the expert on what's right for you. You are always that expert. So that's why I've got this as my last suggestion to let your body be the guide. So just as a quick reminder, the 5 tips were to make space. And when we talked about that, we talked about stepping the feet wider. Second one was to move your flesh, making space for booty, belly, boobs, thighs. Third was to befriend props. Find what props work for you and use them. Fourth was to find a curvy, friendly yoga class. And the last was to let your body be the guide. So I'm going to wrap up here in just a moment. I'm just going to touch on some quick FAQs, questions that come my way fairly often. The first one is about recommendations. So what books, clothes, DVDs, etc. that I found that I recommend. So if you go to my site, curvyyoga.com, you'll see in my top menu that I have a page called Freebies. And if you go to the Freebies page, you'll see all of my recommendations. And there's some really great stuff on there, so I definitely encourage you to check that out. I also have some free podcasts, 60-minute practices, as well as some video and written, both specific pose instruction and sequences. So you're welcome to check all of that out on your own time. The next question is, how can I find a curvy yoga teacher in my area? So again, you know, using that curvy friendly sort of checklist that we went over is a great idea. And then I also do host a list of teachers on my website. So if you go to the Find a Class tab, you will see a list of teachers who have been trained specifically with me in curvy yoga. And then you'll also see a list of teachers from all over the world who are teaching similar styles of yoga, not called curvy yoga, who haven't trained exactly with me. But I'm wanting to just have, you know, as big of a list as possible on my site of teachers so that more and more students can find classes. And then the last thing I wanted to mention, an FAQ that I get, is what if I don't want to practice in a group? And I just wanted to let you know, because sometimes people are unaware of this, that many yoga teachers who teach group classes also offer private instruction. So if that's something you're interested in, if you find a teacher who you like online but you're not sure you want to go to class, you might just shoot them an email and say, hey, I'm interested in private classes. Can you let me know if you do that and what that would look like? And sometimes if the teacher has a website, they'll have that information on there. So you might just be able to scope it out without even sending an email. But if not, then you can get in touch with them. All right. Well, thank you for hanging with me through this talk. You don't have to have a yoga body to do yoga. 5 ways to make yoga work for you. It's been really fun to connect and share this information. Well, the thing I mentioned at the beginning that I wanted to give you is an excerpt from my book. So I have a book called Permission to Curve, and it's a book of 60 plus curvy yoga poses. There's lots of pictures, there's video, there's written instruction for how to adapt these poses. So really going even more in depth into what we've talked about here today. And so I've got an excerpt from the book for you, and it's the restorative section. Yay! So you can check it out and get your relaxation on. So the way that you can grab that is to just visit my website. Go to curvyyoga.com, and that's curvyyoga.com/masterclass, all one word, masterclass, masterclass. And big thanks and hugs to Golda for inviting me to be part of this speaker series. And I'm so honored to be part of this. The other speakers are just so impressive, and I'm really excited to hear what they have to say. So if you have any questions, I'm really happy to talk with you. You can just connect anna@curvyyoga.com or visit the contact page on my site. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about anything that I've talked about here today, or anything that you might go kind of check out on your own and then come back. So it's so nice to talk with you, and happy practicing. Bye.